It was only meant to be for one night, but their chance meeting has left a far more lasting impression than she ever intended. Megan wants to keep her pregnancy a secret, but when she crosses paths with the father again, even she can't fight against fate. I'm Heather Songster, and this is Hopelessly Romantic. Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to another episode. I hope you've got your writing boots on, because we have another Western Dream from Harlequin's Special Edition series. Our book today is The Horse Trainer's Secret by Allison Lee. Today's selection is a little bit special, because it comes at the request of our technical advisor. Well, really, I showed him all the books that I was sitting on, and I told him to pick the next one, and this is the one that he chose. And it's also our return to the Special Edition imprint, ever since She Dreamed of a Cowboy way back from episode 2. I've noticed that this imprint has an affinity for cowboys whenever I take a look at the new releases page. But in all fairness, the cowboy genre has a huge slice of the romance novel pie. It's not just the Special Edition books. This is another novel from a long-running series, Return to the Double C Ranch. Even longer than I would expect, since this current series is a sequel to the first group of books, The Men of the Double C Ranch. As a result, there are a lot of recurring characters, I'm assuming, popping up in this book. There's a risk of being a bit lost when characters spout exposition about past events, but if a reader is ever confused, there is an entire family tree PDF on Allison Lee's website, so you know who's who. She's been with the Double C for a long time, starting in 1998, and so far it looks like she has about 29 books all surrounding this Wyoming ranch. She has more than a few standalone novels as well, so we can feel safe knowing that she's been at this game a while. Now that we've got a baseline for what we're getting into, let's go ahead and get started with that cover. We've got another cover that features only half of the proposed couple. It's the woman, wearing a flowery red sundress topped with a denim jacket. And not only is she leading a horse through a sunlit field, she is also visibly pregnant. It's all right, I suppose. It goes with the title, that's for sure, as Megan is a horse trainer, but again, we get that photoshopped feeling. While the concept sounds nice, it's clear that she and the horse have been edited to look like they're in the same space. This is purely a nitpick on my end, but she's holding the horse's lead rope so loosely that if he decides to act up, there won't be much she could do about it. I like the idea that the cover is proposing, but its execution leaves a bit to be desired. But let's not make any assumptions based on the cover and get right into our story. On a cold and snowy March evening, Megan Forrester is meeting up with some friends and an architect to begin work on a guest ranch in Weaver, Wyoming. Megan is a horse trainer, like we've mentioned, and she's here to help design an equestrian center for the ranch. Everything from designing stables to buying horses, and it's an incredible opportunity for Megan. After business comes relaxation, and the group is joined by a cousin from her friend's family, Nick Ventura. Sparks fly between him and Megan almost instantly. Wanna dance, Megan? She was stuck in town for the night at the very least. She was celebrating, and now a mouth-watering guy had practically dropped right into her lap. She slipped off her bar stool to stand in the very narrow bit of space between them. His jean-clad thigh felt solid and warm against her. Dancing will do. She slowly turned her hand in his and returned the subtle caress. His gray gaze sharpened, and she smiled slightly. For a start. Now we have a little bit of a time jump, and we meet back up with Megan. It's May, and she is desperately fighting some morning sickness. Relying on lemon drops to help ease the nausea, we get some insight into her personality, mostly that she is incredibly independent and headstrong. It's her first day on the job, and she will be damned if she lets a little morning sickness upend her career. We're also getting some exposition on our cast of characters. there's a woman named Rory, Megan's best friend, who is married to a bloke called Gage Stanton, who was the reason Megan had the job at all. Small instances like this creep up now and again, where we meet characters from past books. Gage and Rory are one such couple. But we'll get back to Megan, who is climbing out of her vehicle when none other than Nick Ventura rolls up as well. Context clues are enough to tell us that, yes, she's pregnant and he is the father. She's rather salty about it as well, but that's likely the nausea talking. And she is none too happy about the fact that the first architect hired for the new guest ranch had bailed, and Nick also happened to be a top-notch architect, so he stepped in. Now Megan is doing what she can to remain coolly professional while she argues with Nick about the size of the stables. What was supposed to be a small operation had turned into a large resort, and they would need twice the amount of horses, and unfortunately, the current plans haven't accounted for that. While Megan is arguing her points, Nick forgets what professionalism is, and tells Megan that she looks nice and red, and asks why she ignored his calls. She deflects by asking where Jed and April were, since they were the leads on the project. They are also another previous book couple. Nick explains that they'll be along, and Megan decides to be upfront. What they had was a one-and-done thing, and Nick playfully argues that if she hadn't snuck out of his hotel room that night, it most certainly would not have stopped at just one. Right about that moment, April and Jed finally arrive, and they begin a tour of the grounds. There's some more exposition about the people that will be hanging out with in the story, and a disgustingly adorable moment between Jed and April. At the end of the tour, the chapter ends with Megan bringing up the stable issue. We next meet up with Nick as he's in a meeting with a woman named Vivian Templeton. He's been working with her on a project for a public library. Vivian gently teases Nick about his horse trainer, as she calls it, knowing full well that he has been pining over Megan since they met. We meet yet another character, Delia Templeton, Vivian's granddaughter. It is clear that Delia is being set up as an obstacle for our couple, since she is throwing herself at Nick with all the force and velocity of a medieval trebuchet. Nick, for his part, is not at all interested, and does his best to deter her. More and more characters keep getting mentioned during their meeting, and I had to keep referencing that family tree that I mentioned earlier. It got slightly frustrating. The author has written a lot of books for this small Wyoming town, and I wasn't exactly up for running a genealogy assignment while I read. I imagine that it's tough writing in this sort of constraint, and finding the balance that to keep new readers like myself in the loop while entertaining returning readers with their favorites, it's likely a significant challenge. But I will say that it does a lot to flesh out the world that we're visiting. It's easy to see these characters as real people when they have had so many interconnected relationships. After the meeting, Nick heads back to his firm, talks with his father, who was also a former book hero, and also teases Nick about his horse trainer. Nick assures himself that Megan will come around so long as he is patient, and he decides to give her a visit at the hotel that she'll be staying at during the ranch project at the end of his workday. He heads to the motel and asks the receptionist for the room in which Megan is staying. A receptionist who should be fired because she happily gave Nick the room number. To the book's credit, Nick does note that it's not a stellar example of the motel's privacy policy, but then again, he's still there asking for Megan's privacy to be violated, so I'm not sure how I'm supposed to look at this. I'm going to go with ahead and say it's not bad, but not good either. He's also amused by the fact that it was the same room number that she stayed in the last time they crossed paths. He is, of course, calling it fate. He offers to take her to dinner and insists that it's not a date. He simply wants to tell her about the changes for the stable based on her recommendations. Reluctantly, she agrees, and he takes her to a local pizza joint. A bout of nausea sends Megan to the bathroom, and when she returns, she finds Nick talking to another previous book couple. They are J.D. and Jake Forrest, and they run a horse rescue. They offer Megan a chance to visit, and perhaps even volunteer if she has the time while she's here for the project. Again, they're throwing people at us, but at least this couple will be somewhat relevant to our story. Nick and Megan return to their dinner, and after a small talk about their families, they get down to business with going over the plans for the new stable. Space seems to be the big issue, and budgets, of course. They don't have any solutions, not yet, but Nick is sure that they will figure something out. Nick drives her back to her motel, and Megan has a small war with herself. Invite him in. It's not as if you can get more pregnant. She swallowed again. One and done. Remember that. Thanks for dinner. You already said that? She'd never been one to blush, even when she'd been young and naive. If she'd ever been naive at all, not with Bertie Forrester raising her. The fact that Megan's cheeks felt warm now was as unfamiliar as everything else going on inside her. Blasted hormones. They were making her feel like a lunatic. I love this quote. It's got just the right bit of humor to make me smile, and mixes Megan's internal and external driving forces into a coherent look at her personality. Megan has been shown to us that she is fiercely independent, but it's clear that her independence can get in the way of her own needs and desires. She certainly is lusting after Nick, and it could be argued that she needs to tell someone about her pregnancy, but she's determined to go about it alone, at least as far as she can go without telling people. The next day, Nick takes Megan out to the worksite to review the potential space for the new barn. It's a bit of a hike, so we get a good opportunity to see the two of them alone in the woods, both in their element, Megan out on a trail, even if she is Sans horse, and Nick checking every last detail for the architecture. All the while, Megan keeps fighting with herself, fighting that desire that she has for Nick, and the need to keep to herself. After Nick drops her back off at her motel, we see that the need explained when Megan listens to a phone message from the women's clinic she visited to get confirmation of her pregnancy. From the looks of things, her mother dumped Megan on her grandmother Bertie at the first chance she had, so Megan isn't sure how to feel about motherhood yet. She knew that she would have to tell Nick eventually, but there's not a good track record in her family for parents sticking around, so obviously she's apprehensive. He invites her to his office the next day, where they meet up and talk about the configurations for the stable. Small alterations and changes are made, and Nick's ready to send the plans out to the engineers for a confirmation. As they're wrapping up the meeting, which was filled with the expected close quarters fingers brushes, Delia pops in with a gift of bread for Nick, and a territorial dance for Megan. Draping herself over Nick, Delia manages to make Megan uncomfortable enough that she has a cold but polite departure, much to Nick's chagrin. Delia is beginning to remind me of Brandy from She Dreamed of a Cowboy, except Brandy wasn't so, I'm going to say, desperate for the hero's attention. True, she was draping herself all over Hunter, but Delia is taking this up a notch. Baking food, interrupting meetings, doing anything she can to raise any and all flags that Nick belongs to her. This type of plot point is a little frustrating for me, but that might be because I run in the fantasy fandom circles, where shipping is practically a professional sport and all of the controversy it entails. Anytime there's even a remote chance that another character might get paired off with someone other than what the author intends, it can run rampant in its designated fandom, and the internet being what it is, it can become extremely toxic. So when someone like Delia is being introduced into a story, I tend to brace myself, not only against what might become extremely awkward between our two main intendeds, but also the fandom backlash, both for and against the main pair. I know that I'm reading too much into this particular situation. The dime store romance novel isn't set up for this sort of angst. It's purely a matter of taste, and when it comes to mine, I wish we didn't have to see this tug of war between our heroine and someone we know is obviously only there to antagonize her. In this way, Nick is being objectified in that he's become a trophy to win. Yes, Megan doesn't want to run her horse in this race, as it were, but we all know how this is going to go. And if there's anything that I don't like, it's objectification. Megan already has enough on her plate. She doesn't need a romantic rival on top of everything else. But she does know what will give her some peace of mind, and that's horses. Going back to the couple that I mentioned, JD and Jake Forrest, she goes off to their farm to help out at their horse rescue. This chapter is full to the brim with both internal conference on Megan's side, a little small town backstory, and plenty of horsey interaction to satisfy horse crazy kids like me. Megan daydreams a little, inspired by the beautiful rescue facility, and gets a tour from JD, who is thrilled that Megan is both able and willing to muck out stalls. After she's got the full lowdown, Megan gets to work feeding, mucking, and grooming horses. And here's where Nick finds her, picking out burrs from a pony's mane. He's here to check on a delivery of materials for a project that he's building on JD's land. But Megan is antagonistic, and she's not thrilled that Nick's come this way. It also isn't helping that the pony she's working with has been traumatized and is fearful of men. A burr sticks Megan in the finger, and it seems to unleash a building hurt and anger within her. I don't care how many girlfriends you have. Liar. Despite herself, she slid a look his way, then jerked her attention back to the pony. She worked several drops of oil into the last matted knot. If she's not your girlfriend, she obviously wants to be. Dear God, Megan, shut your trap! I've known Delia a long time. She'll lose interest before long. Burrito jerked against her tie and lifted her back leg again. Shh. Megan stroked her again. Relax. Nobody's trying to hurt you. Not here. I could say the same thing to you. Then he sighed when she remained stoically silent. She heard a rustle again. Don't stay out here all night, Megan. I don't think the juxtaposition here could be any more obvious. Megan is helping a scared and uncertain horse learn that she doesn't have to be afraid of anything, that no one will hurt her, and here is Nick doing the very same to Megan. And much like a horse trainer would know, Nick knows that he has to remain patient. And it does seem to work, little by little. Nick receives the engineering report they need to move forward with the construction on the stable, but it's not good news. He uses this as an excuse to discuss the problem with Megan over dinner. He even leans on needing to drop something off at a client's place to make it seem more like business. As they drive towards said client, a pediatrician, Megan decides to open up a little bit, talk about her family some more, or rather, lack thereof. Nick gets to talk about his, and they do seem to be warming up with each other. The warmth gets sucked into the vacuum of space, though, when Megan sees the doctor's office full of children. She wouldn't have gone in at all if she hadn't needed the bathroom, and now she's getting to stare her future in the face. To make matters worse, it turns out that Delia is related to the doctor, and it just makes things more awkward. The two of them make it to the Chinese restaurant that Nick picked out, and after a small moment about expectations, they talk about the barn and how it needs to change. It looks like Megan is adding some input inspired by her day at the horse rescue, and hopefully their new plans will work. Nick takes her back to her hotel, and we get an achingly tense goodbye, hormones practically spilling over their shoes. Nothing spicy yet, but maybe with time we might get something. During that tense goodbye, Nick invited Megan to go to a party with him, a junior high graduation party for his sister. During the festivities, Megan allows herself just to get a little bit cozy with Nick, hand-holding, casual touches, the usual, and even her ever-annoying morning sickness isn't enough to pull Megan totally away. Something I have noticed is that this book paces itself in a way that I feel is slightly unusual than other romances of its kind. In a typical romance novel that I've seen so far, the love affair happens in a span of days, and we might not meet up with our couple for maybe several weeks until something else interesting happens again. Here, our story is almost a day-by-day ledger. Maybe a couple weeks have passed, and we've been present for nearly every single one. It has both the effect of running ahead full steam and still feeling like they're never going to get around to even kissing. I'm not sure how I feel about this style of timekeeping. On the one hand, it's good that we can see the relationship evolving day by day, but it's almost tedious in some ways. Megan is constantly convincing herself that she doesn't want anything to do with Nick, and when she wears herself down on the idea, she goes right back to denying herself. For his part, Nick is teasing, but he's not pushy. He's doing a good job respecting Megan's boundaries, mostly, and he's happy to wait for her to figure it out for herself. The trouble is, time isn't on anyone's side right now. So far, Megan's been lucky. She's not showing yet, and she's been able to write off her morning sickness as an ulcer to keep Nick in the dark. I'm not thrilled that she's keeping this a secret from Nick. He is the father. He should know that at least he got her pregnant. I realize that Megan just doesn't have a great track record for family staying with her, but this is one of those heroine traits that just makes me want to bonk her on the head with a rolled-up newspaper. Speaking of time, Nick has to head out of town for a client. After he drops off some catalogs for Megan to look over for the barn fixtures, he lets her know that he'll be gone, and now she can have maybe a little bit of space to get her head straight. And she's going to need to figure things out quick, because we've got a quarter left in this book. It's the biggest time jump we've had. What was supposed to become a few days became weeks, when his job was delayed by a problem. Megan was just getting around to the idea that she actually missed him when she found out that Delia had also left town a couple of days ago. And the gossip in the local diner told her that Delia has it bad for Nick, and that's where she had gone. Determined to get Nick out of her head, especially after a visit with an OBGYN to check on the pregnancy, she heads down to the horse refuge to get some time in with the horses. She's working on getting Burrito to tolerate people better, and who should she see except Nick? Up here. She looked up and nearly swallowed her tongue. He was standing on the roof of the Medwing barn wearing work boots, cargo shorts, and a tool belt. And that was it. Nada. Nothing else. No hat to shield his head from the sun. No shirt to protect his tan, sinewy shoulders either. And the heavy tool belt he wore was doing a good job of dragging his shorts almost beyond his hip bones to the point of indecency. Gone was the urbane architect look. In its place was sweaty construction guy look. Face it, Nick Ventura is mouthwatering, whatever his look. Nick mentions to her that she would have known all along that he was back in town if she would reliably keep her phone on her, and he also tells her that she seems off. This is not what Megan wants to hear, mostly because he called her cranky, but not in her usual sexy way, so she storms off. She takes one of the horses she's picked out for the ranch for a trail ride to cool her head, and just as she's gotten chilled down, Nick catches up to her on another one of the horses. They have some annoyed small talk, of all things, some surrounding an event with a local political figure. Nick is gently pushing Megan to admit that she actually missed him, but doesn't take it very far. After they've gone a ways on the trail, Nick decides to check his GPS to cross-reference a property map, and Megan dismounts to get a close look at his work. And that closeness is exactly what we have been waiting for over 200 pages. Nick tells her that while he was gone, the only thing he could think about was her, and things heat up. Do you know how many nights I spent in Gillette thinking about you? His words tickled in her ear. The feel of you? His hand moved back down her spine, sliding over her rump, her hip. The taste of you. His hand moved up to her breasts, which were aching for his attention. He tugged on her shirt, and the snaps popped open. How many times I woke up hard and wanting nothing more than this. He dragged the stretchy knit below one nipple and then the other until they sprang free, tight and hard and so sensitive that when he leaned down to take one in his mouth, she nearly came right then and there. As steamy as this is, I can't help but remember that they both have each a horse's rein in their hands, or at least looped in their wrists, which is a bold move considering what they're getting up to. One horse decides that a sound or move is just scary enough and that both of them are going to have a bad day. Also, we're okay with the word nipple, but we need to use the word rump. I realize that we want to remain tasteful, I suppose, so the author might want to avoid the word butt or even ass. It might even be a requirement from the editor or Harlequin in general. But speaking for myself, using rump as an alternative to a more casual vernacular is far more distracting than my potential offense at reading the word butt. I hear the word rump and I think roast, not sexy times. As the scene continues, I figure it would end just before the act itself, to give us some sexual tension for flavor. I mean, they're outside after all, out on a trail and basically attached to two horses. But I am surprised to see them go all the way out here. I don't think that it would count as exhibitionism, since they're basically out in the middle of nowhere, but it cuts close. Either way, I was not expecting to see it on the menu. The two of them get straightened out and they head back to civilization. Once Megan is back in her hotel room, she doesn't have a lot of time to process what just happened because she gets a call from her friend Rory. I mentioned Rory at the beginning, and I'm reminded again at how much background this book is standing on. Their conversation is mostly gossip, and Rory's announcement that she's pregnant. This puts Megan off from telling Rory the same, probably because her nerves are shot right now. I wish that Megan had more interaction with friends about her situation. She's very isolated right now. In a town she's not familiar with no one she's comfortable confiding in about her pregnancy, and surrounded by light teases from nearly everyone that she's got the hots for Nick. She doesn't even get to have her horse with her. If I were in her shoes, I'd be ready to blow at a pin drop. A bit more time passes, and Megan's time is up. She's convinced that Nick is too good to be true, despite how he makes her feel, and as July begins, Megan's little baby bump becomes exactly that. A bump. A quick run to a clothes store helps Megan hide the charade just a little longer, while she gets ready to join the town in celebrating the library that Nick is designing. The day before the grand opening, they're all out at the local diner. Delia is also among the throng just to get on Megan's nerves. Sure, she's actually involved with the library, considering her grandmother is footing the bill, but still. And with a small moment where JD mentions that Nick would never willingly give up a pizza crust, but he's been giving Megan his crust every time they have pizza, Megan gets sent over the edge and flees back to her hotel. She feels far too familiar here, and it's time for her to start cutting cords. Nick is done with his patience strategy and goes to confront her at the hotel. She insists that there's nothing between them, but Nick is confessing his love. She's denying it, saying he is confusing sex with love, and he is not budging his point either. Her phone rings, and she effectively ends the argument by answering the ring. Nick takes the hint and leaves, and now Megan has to explain to Rory that things are upside down. Rory happened to be in town, so luckily she's only 10 minutes away. She drives over to the hotel, and it only takes one hug between the two women for Rory to figure out that Megan's got a bun in the oven. And we all need a friend like Rory, because before Megan said that Nick didn't know, Rory was ready to rain hellfire on the man for not stepping up to the plate. But she does knock some good sense into Megan's head, and so she gets her courage up to run after Nick to finally tell him the truth. She tracks him down to Vivian Templeton's house, and after screwing up her courage some more, she finds Nick. The trouble is, my worst fears were realized. Megan sees Delia locked lips with Nick. We all know what this is, the inciting incident to get us to a third act separation. Of course, Nick didn't actually kiss Delia. Delia, being the token rival, planted her lips on Nick's face without his consent in a last-ditch effort to snag him. And Megan, of course, had to see it, jump to the conclusion that, of course, all men are terrible, why would Nick be any different, and bolt. She runs off to the horse rescue again, sees the little angry pony that doesn't like anyone, and calls her grandmother Bertie. She tells Bertie that she's pregnant, but because small-town gossip cannot escape her, Bertie already knew somehow. Megan tells her that she's not going to do what her mother did, and dump her baby off on someone. She knows it'll be hard, but she'll get through it. What Megan doesn't know is that Nick was right behind her when she made the phone call. He'd gotten a call from his grandfather telling him where she was, though I'm not sure why. But he heard the part where Megan said that she didn't need anyone, and he tells her that the message was received, turns away, and leaves. Nick heads off to rant at his father, because now it's his turn to get some sense knocked into him. He gets rightly told off for not using his words and telling Delia an actual no, instead of his tactic of just ignoring her advances. His father also gives some wise old guy advice, telling him that not everything is perfect, and Megan's had a hard time of it, and if Nick loves her, he will make it right. It's the shortest third act separation we've seen yet, and I doubt we will see shorter. Nick runs all over town trying to find Megan. She's not at the hotel, nor at the horse rescue, and Nick is running out of options. But when he goes back to his condo to regroup, there she is, sitting on the front step. They go inside the condo, and Nick tells her that when he told her that he had no expectations way back at the beginning, he had been lying. But he had wanted to give her space and time, and the baby doesn't change a single thing. He admits that he probably should have told her the truth sooner, that he'd completely fallen for her after that first night, but what's done is done. Megan's barriers are all well and truly down, and she is open to whatever future Nick sees for them both. The epilogue takes us to the next day, for the library opening, and it only affirms their connection. I'm not sure why we need epilogues like this. It was only the next day, we already knew everything that they gave us in those last two pages. Either make it a break in the chapter, or make an epilogue set further into the future, like perhaps in a year or so, where they've got the baby and maybe even another one on the way. Or that they've started working on the house that they'll live in. I'm just more and more frustrated with these epilogues that add essentially nothing. But don't let that take us away from the fact that Megan and Nick are very much in love and looking forward to the future. With that, we are finished with the horse trainer secret. Epilogues aside, what did I think of this Western romance? Well, it's a little hard to say. I know I gripe a lot about communication, but I really should give these characters some slack. Half the problems in this book would be easily solved if only the couple had used their words and talked to each other, but if that happened, well, we wouldn't have a book now, would we? And while I appreciate the author calling back to her other books, despite not having read any of them, there were moments that I felt like I'd wandered into a soap opera mid-season. One big B-plot involved Nick's grandparents, or at least I think it was his grandparents. There were so many relatives all over the place, I could not keep track. And they were in the middle of a marital spat. As far as I could tell, that hadn't been resolved in the end, so we may have to wait for a future installment. And while this all fits nicely into the Western genre, it misses the cowboy requirement by just a hair. Nick may have been an architect, but he does have enough horse sense to satisfy Megan as a partner. At least, he would understand when she ran off to do horsey things. So with all of that, let's get into Heather's final score. Our cover, first as always, will get a 2 out of 5. I don't have much more to say about it than I already did. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great either. I understand that Harlequin pumps these books out at a breakneck speed, but I would like them to take a little bit more time and pride on their covers. I know they can do better. I've seen it. Drama is a 3 out of 5. I won't say that this novel was particularly dramatic, but it balanced itself out enough that I didn't feel overwhelmed with the nonsense that might accompany a story based on a one-night stand. Delia's involvement, however, was slightly over the top. I would much rather have a potential rival become a more benevolent character, rather than a desperate woman trying to shove her tongue down the hero's throat whenever she gets the chance. Romance is a 4 out of 5. The buildup between our mains goes at a believable pace, and the story did a fairly good job at making it believable. However, there's a spark of something at play here. I would have liked to have seen the novel express what made them attracted to each other as partners beyond sexual attraction. Megan did call this out, almost, when she told Nick that he confused love with sex. And it would have helped to have seen a little bit more communication between the two of them. I know what I said about communication a moment ago, but I don't think Megan had to hide the pregnancy for that long. Spice level gets a 3 out of 5. It was pretty tame in this novel, all things considered. They had the one visible fling, and the rest of the sex was mentioned offhand. I would have given this a 2 for Spice, but then we had that our outdoor excursion, and that bumped up our score. Finally, realism will get a 4 out of 5. I can see all of these elements happening separately, easily, so it's not far-fetched that a few would come together in this type of story. The piles and piles of backstory helped flesh out our world, but it also hindered the story in just a tiny way. It's not a soap opera, not by a long shot, but there's enough backstory to lay the foundation for one. And I have to be honest, I actually had a hard time reading this book, and subsequently, I had a hard time writing the script. Something about this novel in particular just didn't drive me, and really, I'm left feeling lukewarm now that I'm finished with it. But that's just on my end. This is not a bad book. In fact, it's probably one of the better ones you'd find picking a random title off the Harlequin shelf. And I'm not going to let my apathy get in the way of an honest rating. For my final score, The Horse Trainer's Secret will get 4 adorable bucking ponies out of 5. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster, and our technical advisor is Kwang Hin Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an Age with K production. And remember that it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.